This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's an April Fool's Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
one of the biggest fools ever, Glenn Ayers.
Oh, we do not suffer fools gladly on this show, as you know. And there are so many out there, and given that many of them are malicious fools, we're forced to push back against their evils. Michael Kellett of Restore the North Woods returns to the show to jest about the fools trashing our forests and our patience. Okay, how about we go on to Enviro Show Quote of the Week? So our Enviro Show Quote of the Week this week seems quite fitting. Quote, it is difficult to free fools from the chains they revere. And that was Voltaire. They revere their chains, Glenn.
Absolutely. It's sad but true.
I guess that takes us to our interview with Michael. We'll be talking about some fools that work for DCR and other state agencies.
Yeah, I'm going to sort of apologize for, since we recorded the interview first, I'm going to apologize if listeners think that I might have gotten a little out of hand and ranted too much during the interview, but a few things really set me off. You know, I have these kind of triggers when it comes to climate change and science and evidence and honesty and manipulation. And well, here I go again. Anyway, I apologize if maybe my tone got a little harsh, but that happens when we have Michael Kellett on the show, because he and I kind of have do this Vulcan mind meld where we really think kind of the same about these people that were hoping to do a better job and, you know, are really disappointing in the end. You'll see what we mean when you listen to the interview, but try to cut me a little slack for my passion, I guess you could say, when dealing with these fools. So today on the Enviro Show, we are joined once again by Michael Kellett. Michael is sort of the best friend of the Enviro Show. I'm going to give you that title. You've been on more than anyone else, I'm sure of that. And we always come back to you because of your decades of working on the forest protection issue, especially protecting wildlands. And today we really want to kind of drill down into this recently released report by the Executive Office, Massachusetts Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs. And we're specifically talking about the Forest Carbon Study report that was released. Michael, first off, introduce yourself. Welcome to the Enviro Show. Tell us a little bit about yourself for our listeners who maybe have not listened to the past however many 20 times you've been on the show, but just tell us about yourself. You're the executive director of Restore the North Woods and a key ally to a lot of groups in Massachusetts and across this entire Northeast region and really elsewhere in the country because of all the work that you've been doing for national parks and all kinds of wildlands protection. So again, introduce yourself, and then we'll get into this discussion about this recently released Forest Carbon Study report.
Well, thanks, Glenn. That's a glowing introduction. I don't know how much I can add to that, just that Restore the North Woods is a small grassroots group, and we're a member organization. We depend on our member donations. If people want more information, they can go to restore.org, which is our website. And if you want to donate and you like what you heard when I talk about these issues, please feel free to donate. Right now, one of our major efforts, and we may get into that because it's related to this study, is there are three bills in the legislature, in Massachusetts legislature right now, that we helped to write. And they would protect about 80 some odd percent of Massachusetts state-owned land as reserves or parks, mostly reserves, which are off limits to logging and development and pipelines and roads and all kinds of other stuff that they can do right now on most of our forest land. So that's a big, major thing that we're working on right now. And it's never been more important, of course, to protect our forests.
All right. So let's talk about this forest carbon study. And it just came out. It's dated February 2025. But this was the result of a three-year study. And they claim that they were looking at alternative land use scenarios to calculate the terrestrial carbon storage and sequestration, carbon removal from the atmosphere, that sequestration, and locking it up long term. They claim that they studied that in Massachusetts as a way to predict how much forest we need to save to protect in order for the state to meet the legally mandated by law requirement that we attain net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And that sounds like a lot of jargon and stuff. And like I said, this is a 143-page study that just came out. Healthy forests, intact forests, are the carbon sink on the terrestrial ecosystem. And working lands, which is a euphemism for areas that are dedicated tree farms or logging lands, those are working lands, those are carbon source for decades after they're disturbed. So I just wondered what you saw looking through this, and then I'll have some more specific points that I want to raise.
Well, that's an interesting observation. I mean, what this is meant to do, this study, is to want a little addition as to why are they doing this, is that this is a part of supposedly, hopefully, at least at the beginning, scientific analysis to see what's going on with the forest regarding climate change for science to help guide what do we do in the future. And another part of this was the Climate Forests Committee, which had several scientists and foresters and so forth, and they put their report out in end of 2023, which actually suffered from some of the same problems, in that the Climate Forest Committee had some really good scientists on the committee, and so the outcome reflected their observations and the science that they were talking about, but there were foresters who support the status quo forestry and industrial forestry and the wood products industry and so forth, who had a different view, which was the status quo, basically. And so it ended up sort of becoming he said, she said, unfortunately, although there were some basic things that even the foresters had to agree with, which basically was leaving forests alone is the best thing for climate change. So then they did this study, and this was a modeling kind of study. And when I looked at this, in the final study was, as you say, the final version, I was involved in this stakeholder group of a couple dozen people who were invited, and I was only there because the Sierra Club was one of the, to their credit, they invited the Sierra Club to be one of the members, and the Sierra Club kindly invited me so I'm a Sierra Club member for many years, so anyway, I was there. And right from the beginning, there were clearly shortcomings, and I raised a number of concerns way back in the early days of this study. And one of them was what you just raised, but another one was, if you look, I mean, you probably are aware of the concept of GIGO, which is garbage in, garbage out. It's an old computer science term. And the concept is, if you're doing modeling or computer or programming or whatever, if you put in bad information or bad assumptions, you're not going to come out with a good outcome. And so that's what they did here. So for a really glaring problem with this study is this scenario framework, they had four scenarios. that they looked at for like likely potential futures of forests and carbon and climate in Massachusetts. And they, but I mean, when I looked at it, immediately it jumped out at me. All of these scenarios include at least as much logging as we have right now. And two of them included more logging. One of them included a lot more logging. They had one that included the current situation, which includes logging and also not very many reserves. They had one that includes so-called climate-oriented forestry, which is just a buzzword for the same for forestry, same old thing. But they were expanding reserves to 33% of Massachusetts. Now, that's just, you know, maybe in a long run, there's some way to do that. These bills I mentioned, they would only protect about 9% of the state. And if you add it to what we have, it would be about, you know, 10, 11% of the state would be reserves or protected as reserves, which would be good. So 33% is just like ridiculous. It's there's no way that's even feasible as a realistic outcome. And then they've got current reserves and ramping up forestry and expanding reserves to 20%, which is another unrealistic thing, and ramping up logging. So I said, why don't you have a, this was with the draft, I said, why don't you do a scenario where you designate all the state lands as reserves, which you could do tomorrow, theoretically. So that's very realistic. And then reduce forestry or even have one with no forestry, just as a baseline. Because we know that, number one, we have a climate emergency, so we know we need to do stuff fast. And number two, we know that if you had no logging or less logging and more reserves, it's going to increase carbon and have all kinds of benefits for climate change. And which I was told, oh, well, that's not politically realistic. We're talking about politically realistic options here. So they just threw it out of hand, discarded it. And of course, the final report had the same four scenarios. And another one was that they claim that hurricanes pose the largest threat to forest carbon. Well, the last hurricane was 87, big hurricane was 87 years ago that did major damage to the forest. I'd say the biggest single threat is logging. And also they focus on development, of course, because foresters always want to focus on as if development's the everything's protected except where there's a Walmart or something. If it's even if it's logged, it's still conserved and whatever. So they rigged the game from the very beginning by coming up with these scenarios that were just not realistic. And another thing is they were really fixated on the idea that cutting down trees and turning them into wood products was going to be a big benefit to the climate. And that's been debunked over and over again, that that's, you lose way more carbon by cutting the trees down with all the energy used to cut them down. You lose all, you end up only using a small portion of the tree. The rest gets burned and it goes up into the atmosphere. So that's a negative, not a positive, but they acted as if it's a positive. Another thing is they talked about after there would be disturbances is that it would be beneficial to do salvage logging, which is going out and just mucking around in the forest that's been damaged by a hurricane or another storm. That's a natural thing. When a hurricane happens, sure, humans, it's not good for humans and it can blow down houses and whatever, but the forests have dealt with those for eons. You don't need to go in and help the forest recover, but they're talking about going in, taking out trees that blew down or that are died or whatever and turning them into wood products. And that's supposedly a big benefit for climate. So they have all these unrealistic assumptions. And so you put it all together. Oh, another one is that more logging of the forest is going to increase resilience of forests for climate. And resilience, for people who don't know, that means the forest is able to adapt and deal with disturbances like greater temperatures or more storms or more drought. Of course, natural healthy forests are resilient on their own. How did they survive for millions of years before humans? There weren't any people in North America till a couple tens of thousands of years ago. How did those forests survive till then? But they assume that logging is good for forest resilience. So you put it all together And guess what? They come up with basically saying, well, actually, something sort of like what's going on right now, except more logging and more wood products. That's just about the sweet spot for climate change and forests. So if you're a policymaker, this looks really scientific, and how can you argue with all this stuff? Because here it is. Well, it's the GIGO. They had these assumptions to start with that are just either not realistic or skewed in one direction toward industrial forestry, and that's what they end up with. So they didn't have any scenario. So to come back to the really important point here, we have these bills in the legislature that if they pass, they will protect about 8.5, almost 9% of the state forest lands as reserves with no logging or whatever. They didn't even look at that as an option. So they didn't even study the potential for that and what that might do for climate, which would be, it would do a lot of good. So I think the whole thing was just basically, I don't think these people were deliberately trying to be dishonest. I think they're in this bubble of industrial forestry world where they really believe everything ought to be managed by humans and that we really know what we're doing. And all we need to do is just decide what we're going to do and where we're going to do it. And let's go for it. And it's going to be great. Everything's going to be great. And as we know, the results of management in the past have been what we got right now is the result of past management, which is not so good. Anyway, so that's sort of my overview.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. And I will put a pin on what I came away from this. And that is that the people that wrote this study, and they took 3 years. Mm-hmm. They've had a full-time carbon modeler. Yep. At the executive office working on this for 3 years. And what they did was, and I might disagree with you that this wasn't, the outcome wasn't intentional, because, you know, when you select people who, and I'm going to use the term dominionists, they believe in the dominion of man over nature. And so they looked at all of this through their dominion framework that they must maintain dominion over everything. And I think you pretty much said that. And so that's what the outcome is. When you had a lot of garbage going into the model, a lot of garbage goes out. But what I really tried to raise at the public meeting that they had was, well, this is based on assumptions. When you do a study, you have a lot of assumptions. And then you also have a lot of constraints. And those are things that are, those are choices that you choose. And the thing, I'm a soil scientist, so the thing that bugs me the most is you have to go all the way to page 91 of this report. And that's pretty much near the end, because a lot of it is references, citations. But this is what it says. Soil carbon is perhaps the most significant omitted variable. And then they gave a bunch of reasons why they could not include soil carbon in this study. Yeah. Now, as a soil scientist, from reading the research, I know that in young forests, soil carbon can be 50% of the total carbon being stored in that system, in the forest system. That's the below ground portion. All they measured in this study was above ground carbon. So right there, they're leaving out literally half the picture. But as the forests get older and older, and when you get to an old growth, you could have a higher, much higher percentage and much larger quantity of soil carbon present. It could be 60, even higher percent of the total carbon in that system is stored below ground in long-term storage, much longer than above ground storage. And yet they omitted the largest amount of carbon from their so-called carbon study. To me, that's a fatal flaw. If you're going to study the carbon in a forest ecosystem and you emit the largest quantity of carbon from your study right off the bat, to me, that means you failed. You are a failure. And that's what I tried to raise in this question that I had for them. And like I said, the when I asked that question, the lead author of this, Jonathan Thompson, he was extremely offended that I would imply that they were using certain types of accounting to hide things, to cheat. And so, you know, I'll give you another example. You can, this is 143 pages.
Yeah.
You can do some keyword searches,
right,
which will tell you a lot. So let's just do a keyword search for the phrase wood utilization or increased wood utilization, something that you mentioned about, oh, the long-term storage of carbon in durable wood products. Well, that's mentioned in this report 62 times.
Yep.
62 times they talk about increasing wood utilization or wood utilization as a way to store carbon. Okay, that's, you know, that's it. How about climate-oriented forestry, or their other term, climate-smart forestry?
Right.
35 times. 35 times they're emphasizing the need to practice climate-smart forestry as if, what's all the other stuff that's not management? Is that just stupid or climate stupid? Like, is wilderness and passive management somehow stupid? Because only logging is climate smart. Anyway, a couple of more keywords that are really important. Go through here and search for the word proforestation. Guess how many times it shows up? Zero.
Yep.
Zero times. Same thing, a key phrase, rewilding. How many times do you think that shows up in this study? Zero times. Zero. They cannot mention these. Those are like the dirtiest words that they could ever utter, would be proforestation and rewilding. So what you have here is a dominionist viewpoint that we need to, like you said, log every inch. I mean, they do talk about reserves, but they intentionally skew this to make reserves look like they're going to stop providing carbon storage. Right. Unless you log the forest, the carbon reserves are going to be so weak and wimpy that after 100 years, they're going to actually stop storing increasing amounts of carbon and start emitting increasing amounts of carbon.
Right.
That's their premise under this
right.
thing. And that is just such BS. It's
yep.
It's really hard to take. It's hard for me to take because these are the things that we talk to them about during the stakeholder thing, and they intentionally avoided including any of the stuff that we talked about, and they instead went for their, I'm sorry, it's a very industrial scale pro-logging outlook that
yeah.
we have to continue business as usual here. And you can tell when you read this that that's really what they are about.
Right.
They're about using data to undermine and underestimate. And really, I saw this as their effort to refute the Wildlands in New England report. This was a direct assault on it, the same way that their initial land use report that was part of the roadmap study that they did several years ago. And that was also done by Harvard Forest. And that really sucked. And
yeah.
this is the same group now that is doing yeah. this thing, whatever you want to call yeah. this thing. And it was a hatchet job in order to refute the really excellent findings in not only the climate forestry report or the forest climate report that came out earlier that you referenced, but also the Wildlands in New England report.
Right.
And I'll also tell you another citation that does not exist in this report. And they do have page after page after page. I mean, there's got to be, you know, hundreds of citations
yeah.
in this report. Kellett et al., the Kellett study or the Kellett paper was never referenced in this. Nothing by Bill Mumma was ever referenced in here. And
yeah.
so you know why those things were left out.
Right.
Because they don't fit their narrative. They don't fit the story that they're trying to pull over the public on what they wanted to accomplish by
yeah.
putting out this, I'll use a word that you're famous for, and that's bogus. This bogus study that they put out to refute the stuff that we all know is reality, and they want to fabricate this illusion that forestry is the answer to the climate crisis and is going to get us to net zero, when it is actually a big part of the problem. And they don't even, because they combine natural and working lands, they don't honestly tell you what that problem is. They just look at it and say, oh, well, as long as the forests overall across the entire state are increasing the amount of carbon that they store, then the net carbon storage is increasing. Everything's good. And so that's a way for them to hide the fact that about 60,000 acres of forest every year in the Commonwealth are degraded and turned into a carbon source instead of being a carbon sink. Those other lands become a source.
And the other thing is, of course, if you talk about increasing logging here, that totally ignores the need to protect areas. What we ought to be doing is flipping it over and saying, what do we need to protect to sustain our stable climate, to sustain native biodiversity, so all the species of wildlife and plants that are native here can survive and thrive? And what do we need to protect so people have these green, beautiful places to go, so they can take their kids and their family to go out and experience nature, which we know is good for your health and so forth? What do we need to provide that? And then what's left over, that's your base where you could think about logging, or you could think about more protection. And as you talked about the Wildlands report that came out a couple of years ago, that was extremely modest in its estimate of how much wildland we need. But it was still, even that study said 10 to 20% of New England should be wildlands. This report, you know, they have this bogus 33% or whatever, which is totally just, you know, it's really thrown out there to kill the idea, because there's no, and everybody's going to go, well, that's not feasible. Of course, you know, why didn't they have the wildlands report 10, they could have done it two more scenarios, 10% wildlands and 20% wildlands. And they could have said, here, we're referring to this wildlands report that says we need more wildlands, and then we're going to fit logging into that scenario. They never do that. It's always based on endless demand for more and more and more wood. Where does it end? I mean, that's the answer they never give us. Where does this endless demand end? How are we just going to cut all the trees everywhere, and then there'll still be more demand? So this whole demand-based thinking, this is what's driving all of this stuff. We need to be, it needs to be supply. We need to say, how much supply can we sustainably provide of all these resources? And to decide on that, we need to know how much we need to protect first, because protection is the weakest link. Protection is what we have the least of. Only about like 3% of New England is protected as wildlands. That's pathetic. So none of that, as you say, none of those things were discussed in this forest carbon study, even though, of course, protection is critical to storing and sequestering forest carbon. So this is why, one last thing, is this is why these bills that we have introduced in the legislature are all the more important, because some people hoped that the state bureaucracy would come up with some you know, reasonable, balanced outcome here that everybody agreed to, and then we could, you know, the state agencies could implement it, we could move forward, and everybody would be happy. But instead, they just fall back on the same old industrial forestry memes. And so all the more reason why, the only way we're going to get any serious protection of forests in Massachusetts is through legislation. It's great that there are some land trusts like Northeast Wilderness Trust that are protecting some lands, but they can only do so much on a private level. So we need to have the state. The first step is to protect our existing public lands that we all own. We can just decide we're going to protect our lands. They're our lands.
And yeah.
This that is can a diversion. Be done. This is really, as you say, I mean, whether it's on purpose or not, I think it's probably a little of both, but it's a diversion from addressing all of these problems in a really meaningful way that's actually going to solve, be moved toward a solution.
Right. You know, that's reasonable is the operative word there. And I was sat in also on that presentation they did Monday night. And those buzzwords, leakage and climate smart and wood utilization, were going right and left. But they came up with a new one, guys. Holistically land use strategy. That's Moon's buzzword, I think. And you know, Muma was in the room. He didn't speak, so I'd be interested to hear what he had to say.
You know, you mentioned the Wildlands in Woodland, Wildlands in New England report, which David Foster and a whole slew of people put together, including the Northeast Wilderness Trust was part of that. And
there were foresters involved in that too. So this wasn't some lefty communist report.
And there were New England Forestry Foundation was part of that collaborative effort.
Yeah.
However, in this forest carbon study report, they mention that kind of offhand once throughout the entire report. They mention it once just to say that there's a definition that they're kind of using out of that report. That's it. That's the only mention. It's on page 29. They mention it once and then forget about it. And you know, that's under a section about passive forest management or reserves. And so, you know, that's really what this was all about. It was a way for them to, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to say, cook the books, fix the study, fix the, you know, this report, so that they can bring it into compliance with what they really want to do, which is continue to turn our public lands into sacrifice zones and tree farms for the wood utilization industry for loggers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what this is. This is a giveaway. And honestly, I mean, I have, like I said, I have skimmed through it. It is so poorly written and so dense and so incomprehensible that the average person would look at this and give up after a few pages.
Right.
I mean, you wouldn't even make it through the executive summary of this thing because it is so much BS and so slanted that I'm going to say they get an F- on this report. I'm sorry. I'm grading today. They get an F-. They failed for three. They took this 3 years. They failed. They flunked out of school now.
Well, and actually, it's a good example of you have, as if I have read a lot of scientific studies out there, and basically you can cherry pick your data to support anything you want to claim. With the resilience thing, logging for resilience, the same thing with wood products are supposedly going to store all this carbon when actually most of the wood ends up being waste that's burned and goes into the atmosphere. So it's the kind of cherry picking. And as you pointed out, the references list shows that what they do is they just pick what supports their argument. And the trouble is the average person, most people aren't even going to read this, as you say, but the average person reads and they go, well, they came to this conclusion. They must have been, look at all this, look how long it is. They must have had a lot of scientific evidence to back it up. And that's usually as far as most people get. And they'll say, believe me, no, look, believe me, not your own lying eyes. Believe me, this is logging is good for it. Logging is going to actually increase carbon storage. It's going to be good for the forest. And we need to do more logging, not less logging.
Yeah, so I'm going to rename this the Massachusetts Forest Carbon Propaganda Report. And I'm going to leave it there because for me, once you don't even consider the majority of the carbon, which is soil carbon, when you just discount that to start, that means that your study is fatally flawed and you failed. So that's where I'm going to leave it. You know, I've made my opinion very plain right here that this was a real hatchet job and they are going to rely on this now.
Yep.
And that's really unfortunate because
Right.
this is going to be what the state is going to use. They're going to say, we got these experts. They
Right.
agree that we need to cut more trees down in order to save the climate. And
Yep.
here's why. And that's really a travesty. So I guess we're going to have to continue to resist. And like you said, the way for us to do that is, I think, through the legislature. So we all have to join in on this effort to pass meaningful legislation that will get them the hell out of our public forests for good.
And if people want information on that, the restore.org website has information. Also, we have a website, savemassforests.com, which has the most up-to-date information on the bills, who you can write to. We need people to ask their members of the legislature, people in Massachusetts, ask your members of legislature to co-sponsor these bills. It's early in the game now, so it's now's the time to get as much support as possible. And Glenn's right, that's the legislature is really, that's the place we need to go, because we're clearly not going to get the change we need through the bureaucracy, these agencies.
So you guys just don't support the holistic land use strategy.
No, we don't like the whole thing, the whole land use strategy we don't like.
Well, Michael Kellett from Restore the Northwoods, restore.org. So again, really appreciate everything that you're doing. Thanks for being on the show and keep up the great work. And,
I'll
say one more time that folks, we need to all get together on this, support this legislation, and really permanently protect our publicly owned forests in Massachusetts. That's really the first step. That's not all we need to do. That's the first step, but it would be a big step. It would really change the picture a lot. So let's do that. Thanks again, Michael.
Thank you.
Well, Glenn, how about that forest carbon propaganda report?
I think it's in Macbeth, the famous saying, "Oh, pardon thy bleeding piece of earth that I am meek and gentle with these butchers." You know, that Shakespeare quote kind of summed up how I felt during that interview. And the result of this forest carbon study is so appalling and so intentionally misleading. And however you want to characterize it, what they did is inexcusable. To spend 3 years on such a piece of propaganda, I don't know if there's anything redeemable in that study, honestly, because it is so tainted. And remember, this is our government, and you wouldn't expect that from the Healey administration, but all you have to do is understand that the people who are surrounding this group are leftovers from the Baker administration. Healey forgot to clean house, or didn't want to, or gave some special dispensation to these leftovers. And this is a Baker era report. I mean, they started working on this during the Baker administration, and they'd carried through. And this is the kind of stuff that would have come out from Charlie Baker's administration. And it's frankly an enormous embarrassment to the Healey administration, and especially to people like Melissa Hoffer, who we had on the show in the past, and who I think are really wonderful people and public servants who I respect a lot. But this gives them all a black eye. This is such a terrible effort on the part of the Healey administration. I'm sorry, but you got to call it the way it is. And like I said, this is an F minus, and they should have done so much better. They had 3 years to do a better job, and they blew it.
Baker leftovers.
Yeah, the most important thing, folks, is to plug in, get together with other people, get active, and remember
to listen to your mother, right, Glenn?
That's it.
Yep. Okay, this is Dio saying adios.
And this is Glenn Ayers. Take care, folks. Get active.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.